discussion of the resurrection. Tonight we're going to look at the events that happened on Resurrection Sunday. Now we're going to back up a little bit and talk about a prelude to Resurrection Sunday before we get there, but we're going to focus on what the Gospels have to say about the events that happened on Resurrection Sunday. Of course, we've talked about five themes that we see when we look at biblical information about the resurrection. The first is that the resurrection is a bodily reality. And that's really what we're going to focus on as we look at the events that happened in the gospel on that wonderful Sunday. It's not to say that we're going to ignore the other five themes, but this is going to be our focus. I think this is why the gospels go into such great detail about the things that happened on that day, about what happened when Jesus was, in fact, raised from the dead. We're going to be looking at a lot of different passages in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. The resurrection figures prominently in all of the gospel accounts. But we're not going to read them all. I'm going to ask you to do some reading on your own in the Gospels. What I want to do is focus on the events and kind of try to piece together from the different things that the Gospel writers talk about a complete narrative. That's when I say that the different Gospel writers present different information, that's to be expected. Anytime you have four people who are talking about the same event, each one of them is going to focus on those things that are of particular importance to them. And we know that the Gospels are written for different audiences. We also understand that Luke probably was the last Gospel written, and Luke kind of does for us what I'm trying to do tonight. He expounds in order a lot of the things that happen. Some people look at the different gospel accounts and they think that means that there's a contradiction. I don't think it does. I think it just means that the different writers focused on different parts of the events that went on that day. So let's talk about the prelude to Sunday. Jesus is crucified, and I don't mean to diminish that in any way. I just want to get to the resurrection. We talked a lot about the crucifixion this morning. Lenny did a wonderful job. But Jesus, after he dies and is taken down from the cross, he's buried hastily. His body is not really prepared for burial. Now, the reason for that was that this is all happening on Friday night, or Friday afternoon before sunset. Once the sun sets on Friday, according to the Jewish calendar, it's the Sabbath. The Sabbath will last until sunset on Saturday. So Jesus is taken down from the cross and he is hastily buried before sunset so that they can participate in the Passover, but they wouldn't have been able to if they had touched the body of a dead man. So that demanded a great deal of care and a great deal of, I'm sure, difficult manipulation to get Jesus down off the cross and to prepare him for burial. But We do know that they wrapped him in a linen shroud. Now, some folks say that it was the Shroud of Turin. There's no evidence that that's the case. In fact, every examination of the Shroud of Turin has proved that it was a fake. It was a forgery. I'm not sure why God chose not to preserve that linen shroud or the face cloth that was on Jesus' body. But I do have a feeling that if he had chosen to preserve those, we'd worship the shroud instead of worshiping Jesus. So there is no evidence that that shroud exists. There is no evidence that the face cloth exists. Just like there is no evidence that people actually have pieces of the cross that Jesus was sacrificed on. A lot of people say that there are pieces of that cross that have been preserved. There's no evidence that that's the case. Now, it is interesting to me that when they first prepared Jesus for burial, they used 75 pounds of spices to prepare the body. They were going to come back later and use other spices. I assume that that means they were going to use more spices to prepare the body for burial, but 75 pounds. So Jesus' body is caked in these aromatic herbs. And I find that an indication that he was clearly dead. There was no mistaking the fact that he was dead. Some people would try to say that he didn't really die on the cross, that he just kind of passed out, and that then they put him in the tomb and he recovered. That's not the way that you help somebody who has passed out to recover. You don't cake the body in 75 pounds of aromatic spices and then put him on a cold wood, a cold stone slab. That's not how you do it. So there's no indication that that was the case, but Jesus is prepared with 75 pounds of myrrh and aloes. Now, I have no idea what the other spices were that they brought to the tomb Sunday morning after the Passover so that they could prepare the body more properly. But 75 pounds of myrrh and aloes. You read about that in John 19. And I think I've listed all of the references here. So if you're interested, I'll send these slides to Jerry and you can use these slides to guide your study. There's a new tomb that belonged to Joseph of Arimathea. There's some indication that he was a very wealthy man because he had his own tomb overlooking Jerusalem. The tomb is sealed with a great stone. Again, we don't know where that tomb was, but it was a new tomb, and they would cut these tombs into existing caves and then seal those caves up with this great stone that they would put in front of the door. It was probably a cut stone, and most indications are that it was cut so that it could be rolled more easily. But it's a great stone. Mary Magdalene and the Galilean women observed where they put him. The reason that they paid attention to where he was buried initially is that they're planning to return to finish preparing the body. So that's why they're coming back to the tomb on Sunday morning. The Jews wanted to be sure that the disciples didn't somehow steal the body and then claim that he had been raised from the dead. Because remember, Jesus has been talking about the resurrection. We saw that last week. He made the prediction that he would be in the ground 3 days. And So the Jews are necessarily worried. They're thinking the disciples are going to come. They're going to steal away the body, and the last error will be greater than the first. So they approach the Roman authorities, and they say to the Roman authorities, put guards out there at the tomb. The Roman authorities have given the Jews Roman soldiers that they control so that they could guard the temple and the precincts around the temple. They were Romans, but they were under the control of the Jewish leadership. It could be that the Jews had their own guards. And they did that as well. And when they approached the Roman authorities, they said, the Roman authorities said, you have a guard, make it as secure as you can. I think what he was trying to say was, you have those Roman soldiers that we've already assigned to you, go make it secure. The reason that I say that is because there's a great deal of emphasis placed on those soldiers a little bit later. So, Resurrection Sunday comes. Mary and the other women rise before dawn. They're not working because it's still the Sabbath. It's no longer the Sabbath. They're not working yet. They are preparing to take spices to the tomb to prepare the body. They arrive at the tomb at dawn, and they are completely surprised. Now, on the way to the tomb, they've been reasoning with themselves, how are we going to roll away the stone? Because we need to have entrance to the tomb so that we can prepare the body. But the stone has been rolled in front of the entrance, and we can't move it. That could be because they were women. It could be because it would take a great deal of effort to move that stone. And it wasn't something that just a couple of people could accomplish. They get to the tomb. And when they get there, they find out that an angel has moved the stone. And they report that the angel is sitting on the stone. Jesus is not there. And the guards, when they become aware that Jesus is gone at dawn, they become afraid. And so they flee to Jerusalem. Now later, the Roman authorities, the Jewish authorities, are going to say to them, well, just lie and say the disciples stole the body. But that there is no way that that could have happened, because if you were a Roman guard and you lost the thing that you were guarding, you were put to death. So there's no way that they fell asleep and the disciples came in and stole the body. That just wouldn't have happened. And the story that they tell in order to cover up what had really happened is a story that nobody is going to believe. Mary and the women who have come to the tomb discover the stone rolled away, the tomb is open. And this time they mention that there are two angels, two men. But from what we can read, angels often appeared as men. And we saw that in the Old Testament. We've seen it consistently. So Mary and the other women that are with her don't know that these are angels complete. They just see two people that are standing there. One of the angels says, Jesus is risen. And so the women have the normal reaction that you would have if somebody told you that. They went and looked in the tomb. Okay? Makes perfect sense. They went and looked in the tomb. It's empty. And then the angel says, go find the disciples and tell them that Jesus is risen. Women are afraid. And I understand that. I can understand that there were two emotions that were just sweeping over these women. The first has to be fear. Because this is not something that they've ever seen. So their first response is fear. There's an associated response, emotional response, and that's joy. But I can understand how these women were so afraid of everything that had happened. And then they run to tell Peter and John, two of the apostles, and they've got to tell somebody that Jesus is risen. And that's just the way that we are. If there's good news, we want to tell somebody.
Amen.
I can't imagine anybody going to the Grand Canyon and observing the wonder of the Grand Canyon and not turning to the person next to them and saying, that is just incredible. That's like finding the cure for cancer and then keeping your mouth shut. So these women go and tell Peter and John. Now let's take a break there. Any other comments or questions? Yeah, Ted.
I'm just going to add to it. Those two women ran into Jesus and recognized Jesus. And Jesus told them to go tell the disciples. So not only did they see with their own eyes, but then they saw Jesus with their own eyes in Matthew 28:9-10. And Jesus told them, go tell them that I'm alive, that I've risen, and that I will meet them in Galilee. So they are, of course, joyous to have learned this from the angels, but even more joyous to have talked to Jesus himself.
Okay. And we'll kind of talk about that a little bit more as we continue our narrative here, because there's an indication that when Mary has that conversation with Jesus, she doesn't know it's Jesus. And her first response to the person that she sees is, Jesus' body is gone. Where did you put it? So, again, as excited as they are, there's still a part of them that knows that once you die, you're dead. And so they're going to have to deal with that part of their knowledge. So let's go back to our narrative. They find Peter and John, and they tell them, Jesus is raised from the dead. The tomb is empty. And Peter and John have the exact response that I would expect. I'm not sure that they believed it, but they believed it enough to run to the tomb to check it out for themselves. When they get there, Peter is the first one. The indication is he outran John. So they get there. Peter goes into the tomb and he finds the linen shroud and the face cloth neatly folded and left there inside the tomb. Then John gets there. John goes into the tomb. And then the record says those two men return home. Mary remains at the tomb. Peter and John run up, they go in, they see what they see, and then they go back home. Mary stays there. She's weeping outside. As she turns away from the tomb, Jesus appears to her, but she didn't recognize him. Okay? She thought he was a gardener. So she said, "Where did you put him?" Now, Mark indicates that this is the first time that Jesus himself appeared to someone. He appeared to Mary. And when he calls her by name, she, of course, recognizes that this is Jesus. That's what puts it over the top. He knows her name. She grabs him. She clings to him. Again, perfectly understandable response. She is excited. Jesus appears to the other women that were there with Mary. They've gone to look for the disciples, and they have the same response. They take hold of his feet. They want to worship him. Okay? So it's Mary and the other women that came with her out to the tomb that see Jesus first. There's a lot of indication that early Christians tried to expunge the record of Jesus appearing to the women first. They tried to take that out of the text. And that's probably because they didn't want women to have that kind of a place. They didn't want women to have that position of honor. But it was Mary and the women who saw him first. Okay? Mary goes back and finds the disciples, and she says, "I saw Jesus." This is different than the disciples learning that the tomb was empty. Now Mary says, "I saw Jesus." And the disciples don't believe her. They didn't believe her probably for the same reason that they learned that the tomb was empty and they ran to check it out because they didn't believe it. Okay? Perfectly natural responses. So let's take a break. Again, any further comments about what we've seen thus far? Yeah, Bill.
Well, I think the account you gave of the tomb being open in the beginning was leave something out. I went to Matthew's recording, and it says the unbelievers, the watchers, there was an earthquake, and an angel appeared. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were like snow. And he sat on the stone, and the watchers, for fear of him, quaked in fear. But it also sounds like the women were there at the same time as the watchers.
Yeah, that would have been the guards.
This was an important thing that the watchers actually saw. They knew somebody didn't come and steal him away.
Oh, that's true.
They didn't see him, apparently.
They haven't seen him, but they know the tomb's empty.
But it's that, you know, as far as I know or I can remember, that's the only incident in the Bible where the appearance of an angel brings an earthquake. Because Jesus' resurrection was an earthshaking event.
Okay. That may just be a correlation. It may not be causation. I don't think the angels caused the earthquake. I think that would be reading too much into it. But to say there was a correlation when they saw the angels and there was an earthquake, I don't think the two are necessarily.
Well, it says there was a great earthquake or an angel of the Lord descended.
Right.
But it sounds like it, but it's.
In however we choose to understand that, could have been that they caused the earthquake, could have been that the earthquake happened. But there was something fantastic that was going on. But we don't really have a continuing narrative of those people that were there that observed it, other than Mary and the women.
Was this Mary the sister of Lazarus and Martha?
No, I don't think so. I think this was Mary Magdalene, the woman that had been a prostitute.
These were people who were very, very close and very special.
Yeah, when you get to the first part of Acts, you find out that there were about 120 people that were typically in the group that was around Jesus. And I have no doubt that Mary and Martha, Lazarus's sisters, probably were in that group. It just doesn't say. But there were more people that were consistently traveling with Jesus and consistently part of that group than just the 12 apostles. 120 were in the upper room when the Spirit came on the day of Pentecost.
It mentions that there were several women.
Yeah.
That I just don't know Jesus out of their means.
Just don't know how many.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, that's not surprising. Later that day, Jesus travels with two men to Emmaus, a city that's not very far from Jerusalem. Jesus eats with the two men, and then he leaves. And they initially don't recognize him. Later they do. And what that tells me is that it's not the visage, the outward appearance of someone that is so critical to recognizing them. It's their character. Because Mary didn't recognize Jesus. These two men don't recognize Jesus. But once you have the continued interaction with Jesus, then they know who it is. So I just mentioned that because I don't know what his bodily form was like. Yeah, Carol.
To go back, I'm not sure I heard you correctly. When the Spirit came on the 12 disciples in the upper room, my recollection is that they were by themselves. I know that 120 traveled, and I know that they were in the upper room at other times, but I didn't think they were there when the Holy Spirit came on the apostles.
I think they were probably there, but they were not the recipients of the Spirit's power. That the Spirit's power came on the apostles. Okay. So even if there were 120 total people in that room, it was the apostles who were empowered by the Spirit. Okay. I hope that kind of clears up that confusion. So they may have been there, but it was the apostles that received that power, the 12. And they had reconstituted the 12 because they had appointed one to take Judas's place after Judas has hanged himself. And that has already happened in the end of the first chapter of Acts. And then in the second chapter, they're together in the upper room and the Spirit comes. At some point, whether it's before or after Jesus appears to the two men on the road to Emmaus, Jesus appears to Peter.
Yeah, sure. I'm just looking at the harmony in here, and Mark 16 verses 12 and 13 talk about these two men as well.
I'm sorry,
Mark 16 verses 12 and 13 talk about these two men as well, and it says that it says in verse 12. Now after that, he appeared in a different form to two of them while they were walking along on their way to the country, and they went away and reported it to the rest. But they did not believe him either. So it sounds like.
Yeah, it sounds that way to me, but I understand that the language is not sufficiently clear to create a precise timeline.
Right.
Okay. So thus far, Jesus has appeared to Mary. He's appeared to the other women. He's appeared to the two on the road to Emmaus. Now he appears to Peter. Read about that in Luke 24. The two men that he appeared to on the road to Emmaus, I think, go back to Jerusalem. They find the apostle and the others. And then later that evening, Jesus appears to the two men and 10 apostles. 10 because Thomas is not there. I don't know why he wasn't there, but he doesn't appear to Thomas on this occasion. Again, it wasn't that Jesus' appearance was such that they immediately recognized him, but they ate with him. They were in a locked room, and Jesus appeared. So whatever his visage was like, he could walk through a door. Now, don't make too much out of that, but he was able to be with them. Okay? And when they ate with him, they immediately recognized that it's Jesus. And then Jesus reiterates to them some of the teaching that he had done about the resurrection. Now, a little bit later, but not on Resurrection Sunday, he's also going to appear to Thomas. But I'm just trying to lay out a narrative of those things that happened on Resurrection Sunday. Lots of different appearances. Lots of different activities that someone doesn't do unless they have been bodily raised. And there's some sense in which he may or may not have looked like the Jesus that they were familiar with. Then it could be that God prevents them from seeing him at that point. That it may be that his visage was as he had always appeared to be, but God holds their eyes back so that they don't see this. Could be that he didn't look just exactly like he did before. And I have trouble with that because later when he appears to Thomas, he says, put your hand in the nail hole. And that definitely sounds like he looked just like he had. Okay. But at this point, the evidence that Jesus was raised is overwhelming. And it's shocking. Yeah, Carol.
Well, if he was raised and he still had when he was raised and he still had the spike holes in him and the hole in his side, it would not be past the understanding that from all of the whipping and abuse that he took, that he still might not have the same look as he did when he was, when they walked with him on
the road. Yeah, that's entirely possible. That's entirely possible. He was beaten severely. So there's nothing surprising about that. Yeah, let me get Lenny first.
They recognized Jesus the way they imagined him when he was here on earth. So there must have been some correlation to his risen body that will suggest that he was dead too.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. Let me get Ted first, and then I'll come back to you, Ted.
We looked at Luke 24 and 16, and I was comparing different translations, but all of those translations make it sound like their eyes were kept from recognizing
them. Yeah.
Which means that it's not necessarily that he didn't look like himself, but that there was some supernatural power in play preventing them from being able to recognize him, even in his recognizable form.
Could be. And that's why I say, I don't know whether it was the visage was changed, the appearance was changed, or God just simply didn't want them to recognize it. Okay. We'll just leave it at that. Yeah. Comment.
I don't have my Bible, so I can't look it up. I need a letter big enough to see, but as I recall, in John, Jesus tells the disciples, I tell you these things so that at the time, proper time, you will remember. And he's breaking bread. And if my memory serves me correctly, in Luke, that's when he revealed himself to them in the breaking of bread. So it almost appeared to me that there was that was the purpose, that they were unable to see him so that that could be fulfilled.
Yeah, that's what makes me think that it was the continued interaction with him that convinced them that this really was Jesus. It was eating with him. At this point, we can safely say that Jesus is raised from the dead. Now, we'll continue to look at events that happen after this. He appeared to more people than this, but this is just the people that he appeared to on Resurrection Sunday. Now, we have a convincing narrative that makes sense because their responses were the kinds of responses that you expect. It wasn't something that was unbelievable because their responses weren't believable. It's not like that. Their responses to seeing Jesus were absolutely understandable. And I think that lends credence to the truthfulness of the account. You know, if I said that something had happened and you immediately believed that this incredible thing had happened that had never happened before, and I was to report that, it wouldn't seem credible because people just don't respond that way. But these people that saw Jesus, they responded the way that you expect them to respond. Absolutely. Well, other comments. Excuse me. Yeah, Bill.
These are honest responses, because if you could tell me something, and because I know you, I believe you, but I want to see it for myself.
Okay. Right.
It's just, you know, so many of us are curiosities. I've got to see this.
Right.
You know, Jesus, the wonder of him actually being alive again is something they're not used to. And it's not that they don't think the women are lying. They just got to see.
Yeah, they've never seen that.
And when Jesus appeared in the room, they thought he was a ghost at first, and they were afraid. And he said, no, I'm not. Feel me. I'm real. I'm solid.
Yeah.
And
it's no different than when Jesus comes to them walking on the water. Peter has the same reaction that I would have. Get away from me. I'm a sinful man. You and your power is so great that I'm afraid to be around you.